scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left.
Off the glass, the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Al Aguilla. Three rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, welcome to October. Let's get things going. It is Tuesday, October 1st, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Steinberg along with you on this Tuesday, as we've got lots to talk about this hour on Flames Talk. Daily Flames Roundtable on some of the camp battles, whether it's Tyson Berry, whether it's Sam Hanzek, and more. We'll get into all of that on the Daily Flames Roundtable in just a few minutes. But right now, it's time to kick things off with our NHL insider, Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. We head to New York City, where Board of Governors meetings have wrapped up on this Tuesday. And join Frank Saravalli now from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com. Joins us every Tuesday here on Flames Talk. Hello, Frank. How are we doing?
Pretty good. How are you, Pat?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you being able to join us. I know that you were locked up in BOG meetings all day, and we'll get to some of the news from New York in just a few minutes. But I wanted to start our chat this week by talking about, you know, your latest article that's out at Daily Faceoff. You put one out a little earlier on Tuesday, essentially the 10 people, players or people, not just on ice, but coaches and general managers, so on and so forth, that are under the most pressure going into the 24-25 season. Now, no members of the Calgary Flames end up on that list, and understandably, I think, knowing the situation they're in. I'm just curious if there were any Flames people, executives, coaches, players, anybody from a Flames standpoint that you were considering putting on that list?
Certainly not from a front office or coaching standpoint. I think if anything, or anyone, it would probably be Jonathan Huberdeau to really take a step forward and be closer to the player that the Flames envision they were getting when they made the trade and then signed him to the subsequent extension. And I think on a way lesser scale, it's probably more internal in his own head and body than anything else. But I think this is a really big year for Dustin Wolf. You've got an opportunity to really kind of seize the crease if you want to. We don't know how Dan Vladar's body is fully going to react and how quickly it's going to get up to speed after his surgery. And it's obvious that the Flames really like Cooley, but and rightfully so, honestly, with preseason action so far. But this is a humongous year for Dustin Wolf in cementing himself as not just a hotshot prospect that has achieved a lot in the AHL, but as someone who is the clear-cut future of this franchise and backbone, that if they can answer that question, if Calgary can answer that question resoundingly at the end of this season, that's going to be an enormous win.
Well, and I can tell you one of the largest stories that everyone's talking about out here, Frank, so far as we move towards the end of 2024 camp is the goaltending, because Wolf has been dynamite in his action. I'm guessing he'll play again Wednesday, maybe get his final start of the preseason. He's been outstanding. Cooley's been great, as you mentioned. And in seven periods of work for a guy coming off a hip surgery, Dan Vladar has looked really comfortable and really solid. So goaltending has been one of the things that's been most intriguing throughout this, and I think you're bang on about a guy like Dustin Wolf being under pressure, and everybody has performed thus far.
Well, I think the Flames are probably hoping it's one of those situations where pure healthy competition brings out the best in everyone, and what an unbelievable problem that would be to have three goalies at your disposal, including potentially Vladar, that becomes instant trade target fodder for teams that might run into issues, health, cap, or otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. It's and it's a good problem to have. You are absolutely right on that front. I'm curious. The only other thing I wanted to ask you, Flames wise, before we dive in on some of the BOG stuff, there's a lot of talk out here about a couple of players on expiring contracts. One's Andre Kuzmenko, who came over in the Lindholm trade in January. The other's a guy who was signed to a one-year contract, and that was Anthony Mantha in free agency. And a lot of people, and I think the leading narrative is, hey, these guys are great to have right now, but closer to the trade deadline, great trade chips for the Flames to have, and they can recoup some nice assets by moving them out before the deadline. And I understand that thinking, and I think it's valid thinking. I just wonder if in your eyes and from your read, if it's quite that simple. Like, is there more to it than just, hey, these guys are here until closer to the deadline, and then they're getting shipped out?
I don't think it's that simple with Kuzmenko. I think the Flames really wanted to get him in last season and make him feel comfortable. I don't know if reticence is the right word, but I think there was certainly a fair bit of back and forth that went on to try and make sure that no trade was waived to have that go through from Vancouver. And he was leaving a tough situation with a team that was, you know, clearly bound for the playoffs, and they ended up winning the division last year, to go to a team that was a non-playoff team as the odd man out. I'm sure that doesn't feel great. And so rather than try and, I think, engage in extension talks, they wanted to make sure he was really comfortable with the situation and was really feeling good about the spot that he was in. And I think the way last season ended up playing out at the end of it, I think the report that I got back was that there were some pretty good vibes, mm-hmm. and they liked what they saw. And now I think it's fair to say that at this point in time, it's a toss up. I could see them, and this isn't me being on the fence. I think I'm telling you, I'm relaying to you what I'm actually hearing, which is the Flames would consider extending Kuzmenko without a doubt. And they have to weigh whether or not what they could get in the return on the market is in a trade is supersedes or exceeds what he could provide by sticking around.
Yeah. Yeah, very interesting. A little bit more, you know, maybe more leading towards a trade and see what you can get back for Mantha, or kind of a wait and see situation there.
Look, I think Anthony Mantha has a ton to prove. I'm not a believer. I stand to be corrected. I think he's a guy that has all of the physical gifts in the world, that has not put it together on a consistent basis, and has constantly run into compete and work ethic issues along the way. And he has to show someone that he wants it. And I just think providing someone like him, given his past and track record, providing someone like him with long-term security is not in any team's best interest.
Yeah.
So if he is able to show otherwise, and that he's changed, he's different, he's a grinder, then this is a guy that could actually be a fascinating proposition for a team. However, I said it at the time of the trade last year that Anthony Mantha was just as likely to be a playoff healthy scratch as he was to be an impact player at the deadline. You can actually go back and find it in my article.
Mm-hmm.
I did a deadline preview. That's what he ended up being in Vegas. It is a guy that just doesn't have it on a consistent basis. He's the ultimate tease as a player, tantalizing skill set, big body that could really do a lot of different things, that just has driven people crazy because they see it in him and they want more, but no one's been able to drag it out of him consistently.
We're chatting with Frank Saravalli, Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com, and that's the Flame side of things with Frank. As we move into where you are and where you were a little earlier on Tuesday. Board of Governors meetings in New York City to get things started for the 2024-25 season. And a few interesting things and breaking, I think it was Aaron Portsline of The Athletic who broke this first coming into the meetings and was confirmed there. Can you give us a little intel and maybe a little context on the ruling when it comes to the Columbus Blue Jackets and their salary cap, or in this case, their salary floor?
Yeah, so the NHL salary cap floor this season is $65 million, and obviously they were on track to crush that number. And then the absolute shock of Johnny Gaudreau's death, that contract gets terminated. And he doesn't end up get his family doesn't end up getting paid out on that contract, FYI. And by that same nature, because it was terminated, it doesn't count against the Blue Jackets cap any longer. So suddenly they went from being comfortably over the minimum that you must spend, the threshold, to being under it. And they solved that a little bit by signing James Van Riemsdyk. They'd still like to add one more NHL veteran to their team. But they were essentially given a special dispensation from the NHL and the NHLPA to say, we understand that you're close, but you don't need to rush and get there by opening night, which is typically how it works.
Yeah.
On the account of just this tragedy and obviously how late in the summer it occurred, no one can really plan for it. That said, I would suspect that the Blue Jackets act sooner rather than later, because what they might end up doing as they get closer to the deadline in March is selling off, and they don't want to be in a spot where they have to essentially not enact their deadline plans because they need to get to a minimum spent. So I'd assume that whether it's a waiver claim or multiple waiver claims or a trade or a signing, that they kind of get to that point. It may not just be by next Tuesday.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. $92.5 million. That's what the projection is for the salary cap next year.
Yeah. So that's actually not news. If you're a nerd like me and you go through the NHL's memorandum of understanding, this year's cap is $88 million. There's a 5% escalator that's in for next season, which is the final year of the CBA. So $88 million plus 5% brings you to $92.5 million. So nothing really new there, nothing different. It's just that they're on track.
Okay.
And I will tell you that the NHL and NHLPA haven't had these discussions yet, but there seems to be some sense that the league may be willing to increase the cap even further than 92.5. Both sides maybe, should they get to that point in discussions.
Where are we on, like, I'm curious what the mood is with the CBA expiring after next season, because there have been, I've covered this league long enough where, you know, there's that impending doom, right? There's years where you're like, oh no, CBA negotiations, and you almost can kind of telegraph a strike or a lockout. What about the mood right now, a year out from a new CBA needing to be figured out? Does it feel fairly amicable, and do we feel like it'll just kind of get figured out without us on the public hearing a whole lot about it?
One could only hope.
You're telling me.
I've stood out on too many New York street corners
yeah,
in all seasons, whether it's been in the heat of August and September to the cold of January and February during lockouts. It has not been fun. But this is as amicable as I've ever seen it.
Okay.
Usually, so with the CBA expiring September 2026, the last few that they've had, they haven't even really spoken until like August, the month before. And even by then, it was so frosty that it was like, you know, this thing's heading for a lockout. This time around, the commissioner said today that he hopes to begin discussions in January of this upcoming year, so 2025, basically 20 some months before the CBA expires, which is like a total rarity.
Yeah.
So that should be music to everyone's ears. And he also said today that he hopes, and this, it always takes two to tango, so easy for him to say, he hopes to have a new CBA extension wrapped up by this upcoming June and the Stanley Cup final, which would be, you know, obviously well more than a calendar year ahead of the expiration. So the belief is that the NHL is not going to be asking for significant changes, but I'm sure that if you put yourself in the NHLPA's shoes, you go, oh, okay, that's great. So that just tells everyone how good the deal has been for you.
Yeah.
How about it's time for us to claw some things back and get some wins for players?
Yep.
So, like I said, optimistic, but I've seen this movie a couple times before, and I'd like to see something different.
Yep. Okay. The Jeremy Swayman situation, Cam Neely was there at Board of Governors meetings in New York. Obviously, there was a little bit of, or a lot of, controversy yesterday with Cam Neely's comments, and then Swayman's agent, Lewis Gross, refuting those comments, and a little bit of a war of words between the two sides. I know Cam didn't say anything today, declined to comment, as you'd expect. What's your understanding on where everything sits now with the Bruins and Jeremy Swayman?
It's a tough question to answer because you see the statement from his agent and Lewis Gross, who also represented Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau, by the way, and did such a fantastic job.
Yep.
Really just paying tribute to them. They're taking a couple days to kind of reassess. I think they felt like the comments from Cam Neely were below the belt. And what it told me was not only did Boston make a tactical error, in my view, taking these negotiations public, but also it showed, I think, everyone the leverage that the Swayman camp has. The Bruins are flustered. They're not used to being in this spot, whether it's been David Pastrnak or Patrice Bergeron or Brad Marchand, like almost all of their star players are underpaid relative to production. And they've done some tidy work on their salary cap over the last 10 years. But this time around, they seem to be flummoxed. And I think they're in a spot where they're feeling it with Jonas Korpisalo heading into game one as their opening night starter. This was not the plan. This wasn't the design. And I think it's in the Swayman camp's best interest to just sit back and let the Bruins, who have already made significant movement. I reported today that the actual offer was 8 years times $7.8 million, so $62.4 total dollars. They were originally in the sixes. So they go from, let's call it 6.5, they're up to 7.8. My guess is that 8.25 gets it done, and that those comments from the Bruins ultimately ended up costing them, or will cost them, a couple million bucks.
Woof. Okay. That's I'm fascinated to see how this thing ends up playing out. Anything else from BOG meetings before a couple other ones to wrap it up? Anything else that we missed from New York specifically that you found notable, Frank?
Just a Calgary connection. I was poking around afterwards and obviously want to do it in a super respectful way, but you see the helmet stickers that everyone's going to be wearing in the league this year in honor of Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau. But I was just beginning to ask the question, how does the league plan to, you know, memorialize Johnny on a more permanent basis moving forward? I think there's lots of different ideas or irons in the fire. My vote is to, and this is purely my opinion, and I don't have one, but my vote would be to rename permanently the Lady Bing and name it the Johnny Gaudreau Award. And
I like that.
Or maybe even more fittingly, the Gaudreau Award in honor of both players. But Johnny won the award in 2017, as you guys know.
Yep.
Lady Bing had a great run, 100-plus years. I think it's time to change the name. I think it's time to change the spirit. And I just think that'd be a really nice touch to keep his name in the mix every single year.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit, actually, Frank. Honestly, that's the first I've heard of it. I'm sure you've brought that up before, but it's the first time I'm hearing it. And instantly, as soon as you say it, I think, damn right, that makes nothing but sense. I quite like that. So hopefully that's something the league absolutely thinks about. That would be a real class move.
I think they just want to properly. The conversation I had is they want to properly mourn and go through the process, because obviously it's not easy and they're all going through the same thing. So they want to take their time and consider all the options on the table and do it right.
Understandable as well. Just a couple more for you. First in Montreal, do I feel bad for those two players. Preseason game, and both David Reinbacher, now 5 to 6 months. Patrick Laine, 2 to 3 months in one preseason game. So obviously feel awful for the Habs, feel awful for the two players involved. And it's the Laine situation that you know, just kind of, it's a bit of a kick in the gut if you've watched his, watch what has happened with him and all he's trying to overcome in the last year or so. I'm just curious your reaction to the Montreal news here in the last few days.
Yeah, obviously really disappointing, but today kind of at least ends a little bit on a positive. They were initially, I can tell you from behind the scenes, the Canadians obviously were initially thinking that this is a season-ending injury, and they kind of kept looking at it. I think they got 3 to 4 different opinions from doctors as him and his agent just kind of kept pushing the envelope here. Is surgery really necessary? Is that the best course of action? And I think the thought process initially heading into today was, if he has surgery, his season's over, and if he doesn't, that he's out 4 to 6 months. This is even better news that he ends up, you know, expected to miss 2 to 3 months, which, based on the way that it looked, it's as tough as that is, it actually feels like a win for the Canadians. But then there's David Reinbacher, who also prized prospect, ready to make the jump to the NHL this season, expected to be in the mix for what I think is actually turning out to be a pretty exciting blue line. And he's gone 5 to 6 months with a knee injury. And it's just like, man, you think back to last year with the Canadians, Kirby Dach, he was their best player in training camp. 2 points in his first 2 games of the season. He goes out with a knee injury, done for the year.
Yep.
Alex Newhook missed how many games last year? It just felt like they couldn't get everything together, but at least I'm hopeful that after a really, on a personal level, a really tough 18 months for Patrick Laine on and off the ice, physically and mentally, that maybe 2 to 3 months ends up doing him a world of good.
Okay. Last one, with the Drew Doughty news and with him going to be out month to month in Los Angeles, I believe the number one, just off the top of my head, going back, I read it this morning, but I believe number one on your people under pressure list was Rob Blake, the general manager of the Los Angeles Kings. What does Blake make a move here without having their superstar defenseman for a long period of time, knowing this team has been in the playoffs but hasn't won a round over the last 3 years? Does Rob Blake react and make a move on the blue line?
I don't think you can. That's the worst part about injuries that occur at this time of the year is, you know, that so the timeline I was told was 10 to 14 weeks for Doughty. So probably sometime in December to mid-January, you know, you have to activate him. So if you spend any of his cap hit, if you don't have much cap space, if you spend any of it, how are you going to then activate? Right. It's the same thing that the Colorado Avalanche are facing right now. They would have loved to have brought in players to help pick up the slack for Gabriel Landeskog and Valeri Nichushkin. That's $13.125 million. It's 15% of the cap. But Landeskog still doesn't have a date yet that he's going to be ready to return. He's been participating in training camp. Nichushkin can't come out of the player assistance program until November 15th. You've got 15% of your cap that is not helping you, and you can't spend it because how are you going to possibly activate them later? So These are some really difficult spots to be in, and I think in the meantime, this was already sort of scheduled to be a breakout season for Brandt Clark, right shot defenseman with tons of offensive upside. I think the hope is that you can plug him into the power play and he takes off and gives your team a shot in the arm, and also from a pure team development standpoint, gives you something really to be excited about.
Great stuff as always, pal. Are you back? Are you back to Philly tonight? Is that the plan?
I'm actually heading to Ottawa. I'm going to stop in there for a little training camp tour, and then I'm heading to Boston, and then I will be back later in the week.
Okay. Well,
then heading to Salt Lake.
Well, then off to Salt Lake. I like that. Okay. Well, we will hear you on the
is
morning
that in your
show.
Neighborhood or?
Yeah, that's my backyard, man. I'll see. I'll come start the barbecue.
It's in the Mountain Time Zone. I figured you just laid claim to everything there. So
absolutely,
congrats.
Always will. Okay, you know what? Now I have no more teeth. I wasn't even expecting that. We'll talk to you next week. We'll hear you on the morning show, pal. Great stuff as always. Thank you, Frank.
Have a good one. See ya.
You're the best. Frank Saravalli, Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com, joining us to kick off this hour on Flames Talk. He joins us thanks to our friends at South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Let's dive in on a couple big questions as training camp moves into its 2024 stretch drive. Welcome back to a Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. Steinberg and Vickers along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcast. I've got to say hello to Vickers this hour, so let's say hello to Vicks.
Hello, Patrick.
Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. Pat Steinberg along with you. And now, the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Let's also say hello to the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, as we jump in on what I think are two of the bigger questions in the final few days of training camp. If you consider kind of Monday of next week is the beginning of the regular season and training camp moves to practices, so on and so forth, then we're into the final 6 days of camp. We're into the final 2 days or two games of the preseason. And boys, once again, Sam Hanzek is one of the stories coming out of a win over Seattle, 4-3 in overtime on Monday night, scores that gorgeous highlight reel goal, shorthanded in the second period, and was just an impact maker throughout the evening, getting a ton of penalty kill time, and did not look out of place playing on that line with Kadri and Kuzmenko. Now, I don't think we're going to see Hanzek on Wednesday in the game group that goes to Winnipeg. Finally going to give him a day off is what I think we're going to be seeing. We'll wait until we get the game groups, but I think it might be time for Hanzek to have just a little bit of a rest, which you can understand, which would mean his final preseason game is on Friday against the Jets at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Guys, here we are on October 1st. Two more preseason games to go. Are you ready to put Sam Hanzek on your opening night roster, or do you need to see more?
Well, if you held my feet to the fire and forced me to answer that question today without the luxury of being able to see him one more time, I would say yes. You know, the message from the management group and the coaching staff since before training camp began was earn a job, take a job. And for me, Sam Hanzek has done that. Again, wasn't great at the Young Stars Classic, very underwhelming in the first couple of games. I thought he was a little bit better in the third game in Penticton, but something clicked for him. In the first preseason game at Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, he just looked like a completely different player. It's almost like he suddenly figured out that some of the things that made him a first-round pick, some of the things that he was able to do in junior, more so two seasons ago than the last season, he could do at a higher level. And when the preseason starts, it's more a blend of AHL and NHL players. But, you know, as the games have gone on, as the games have got harder, as the lineups have been more NHL-like, I think he's continued to elevate his game. And it goes beyond his NHL preseason leading 5 assists and his league leading 7 points. It's just how he looks out there. He doesn't look like a boy anymore. He looks like a man now. And he's only 19, and he's probably going to fill out and get bigger and stronger. But, you know, he's got great feet. He's using his size. He isn't backing down from battles. He's engaging in them. And two really important moments for me, fellas, in back-to-back games against Vincent Desharnais, who's one of the bigger players in the league, it was like Sam Hanzak was looking for trouble with him, which was just so good to see. Because there are plenty of players who have played in this league for a decade who would kind of quickly get out of that situation. But Sam Hanzak didn't. So, yeah, if I had to make the decision today, he would be on the team because I think he's earned a spot on the team. But I'd love to see him play in one more game against a Jets team that we expect to be very good again this season. And I'd like to see how he fares at the end of the preseason, basically against a full NHL team. He doesn't have to dominate in the game. I just don't want him to look out of place. So the answer for me, fellas, is yes.
I think that he, with his body of work to date, absolutely worthy of a roster spot. Is he going to turn out to be an 82-game player this season? That I don't know, and we'll find that out over the course of the season. But you just look at his body of work through camp. First of all, caveat, nice to see that he's earned a day off finally because he's played the max number of games between the young stars
and we'll
and
see
what
that could
play.
Change, but I don't think he's set to play in that game in Winnipeg.
But what we've seen through 5 games in the exhibition series in the preseason, again, Wilsey went through it, 2 goals, 5 assists, 7 points. He's a +8. He's drawn at least half a dozen penalties. And Wilsey, you mentioned Desharnais. I think Desharnais has taken 3 penalties on Hanzik alone in those 2 games. If we want to talk about meritocracy and if a young player does enough to push for a roster spot, he's going to get one. I don't know what else Sam Hanzik could have accomplished out there in order for him to have not just been declared one of the either 13 or 14 forwards, depending on how many Calgary is going to carry for their opening night roster. How he shakes out in the lineup, we'll see. But I think he's done more than enough to warrant an opening night roster position on the Calgary Flames. I just don't know how you look all your prospects in the face and say, hey, you come out and you blow the doors out in camp and we'll make room for you. And then you have one of your guys, a first rounder, no less, go ahead and do that. And then you go to him and say, you know what? You got to go back and do this some more in the AHL before we give you a look.
Well, and that's what it comes down to, guys, because I'm now of the opinion that when you take a look at his camp, like, I feel like Hanzak has to do something drastic to play himself off the opening night roster. And I don't know if he's got the runway at this point to play himself off of the roster. He's been, and Wilsey, what Vic's just said is the biggest thing for me too. Like, you're preaching meritocracy. You're preaching if you are one of the best players, you're going to be on the roster and in camp. And Sam Hanzik has done just that. Every time that he's been out there in a preseason game, he has absolutely been one of the best players. He's helped them score. He's a preseason leader in points. And yes, points in the preseason, we take with a grain of salt. Of course, we all know that. But all he can do is go out and play at his maximum and his best and see what he can impact when he's got the opportunity, and he has done that and done that to the nth degree. So I don't know how you can not put him on the team at this point. And even if he plays let's assume for the sake of this conversation, he plays one more preseason game. Well, even if it's his worst game yet, how can you discount the 5 games he's played prior? And so at this point, it would have to be a drastic showing for him to play himself off of my opening night roster. Like, I'm ready to put him in the opening night lineup for next week in Vancouver. And yeah, guys, I don't know if that means I probably was at that point
Wilsey, I remember last year at some point, it was after a preseason game, and it wasn't the last preseason game, but I remember you put something out on Twitter basically saying Coronado's made the team in your eyes, right? And that was last year, and it wasn't the very last game of the preseason, and Coronado made the team. He had a decent start to the regular season. It tailed off. He goes to the American Hockey League, and maybe that's exactly what happens with Hanzek here. He makes the team. And, you know, 10 games in, it's like, you know what? Great camp. But now the regular season has started. He's not quite ready. Let's put him in the American League for a number of months. Let him get more confidence there, build up his game. And then at some point he comes back. But based on what we've seen at camp, how can you not have this guy on the opening night roster? That's where I am at this point.
Yeah, that's exactly how I see it. And it's not like you have to make a season-long commitment to him.
Exactly.
It's not like, okay, you're in the opening night lineup or you're on the opening day roster. That means we're stuck with you for 82 regular season games. That's not how it works. I think the message, if he does make the team, would be pretty clear to Sam Hanzek. Great camp. Great preseason. Keep it up or you're going down. I think it's pretty simple. But for me, when I look at the players who are competing for that other fourth line winger's job. So in my mind, I've got Kevin Rooney and Ryan Lomberg written in pencil as two of the three fourth liners. For me, he's been better than the other guys. I would say a little bit better than a different type of player than him and Adam Klapka. Adam Klapka for me is right there as well, because obviously he's got great size and probably will play a little bit more physical role. And, you know, he's still been productive offensively, although I don't think he should expect his shooting percentage to stay in the regular season where it's been at in the preseason. But he's had a really strong training camp in preseason as well. Matt Coronado, for a second straight year, got off to a great start, but he's faded away a little bit in the last couple of games. And yeah, last night's game was tougher because of all the penalties the Flames took in the second period, and it got a lot of the offensive players kind of out of the rhythm and out of their game. But sometimes games go that way. How do you respond as a young player? So he's been better than those guys. He's definitely been better than Jacob Pelche. So yeah, if Sam Hanzek does get one more game and at least looks like he belongs, that I think you have to put him on the team to start the season. You probably put him on a short leash, quite frankly, because I think some time in the AHL with the Calgary Wranglers would be good for him and good for his development. And quite frankly, guys, I'd be stunned if he didn't go down to the AHL at some point in time. I don't think he's probably in the NHL to stay forever if he makes the team. But again, the message to all the players at the start of camp were earn a job, take a job. And for me, he's done everything that he can to do that. And the goal that he scored on Monday night, fellas, that was the exclamation mark for me. I was already leaning in that direction, but the fact that Flames coaches trusted a 19-year-old on their penalty kill and that he trusted himself to seize that opportunity and score maybe the goal of the preseason in the NHL, that was it for me, guys. That was the final stamp of approval that I needed.
And Wilsey, he didn't dangle Pat Steinberg for that goal. That was Vince Dunn.
Whoa.
One of their top blue liners, if not the.
And their number one goaltender.
Yeah. So there you are.
Yeah, it was a hell of a goal, and it's been an outstanding camp for him so far. So, I'm really curious as to how this story plays itself out, but I just don't know how you don't put him on the opening night roster as it stands right now. Okay, so then the other question, let's move to the blue line. We're talking Flames camp on our daily Flames roundtable. It's Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg along with you on this Tuesday. Guys, where are we on Tyson Barrie earning a contract off of this PTO as we enter the final stages of camp?
I feel like this is going to be a sensitive topic for some Flames fans, because I know that there are a lot of people out there that want this team to go young and want that to be the top priority. But based on what we've heard from Craig Conroy and the management group and Ryan Huska and the coaching staff and Michael Backlund and the players, this team wants to shock the hockey world and they want to find a way to the Stanley Cup playoffs. If that's the case, I think Tyson Barrie is a better NHL player today than the guys he's competing with to be on that third pairing. So if you can get him for the right price and the right term, and I think you could certainly get him on a one-year deal, I would do it. I would sign him, because he's not going to get a contract that pays him $4.5 million a season like the one that he was on the past few years. So if you can get him for, let's say, around $1 million a year on a one-year deal, I think, A, he makes you a better hockey team now. B, he helps a power play that was probably your biggest Achilles heel last season. He can certainly quarterback a power play unit. C, he can help your young defenseman along. And D, if you're not in a fight for a playoff spot, and I certainly wouldn't bet my house that the Flames will be when all is said and done, but you never know, then I think you can move him at the deadline if he's on a team-friendly contract that expires at the end of the season. It's not like you would have to sweeten the pot for a team to take that $4.5 million cap hit off your books. If he's making $1 million or maybe even less, I think there would be teams that would like to add a player like Tyson Barry with his experience and his ability to help a power play. So if it were up to me, I would sign him. But Pat, I also, having listened to you on Flames Talk for the last week or so, talking about the logjam that creates at the NHL and maybe even more so at the AHL levels, I kind of get that side of it as well.
For me, I am in favor of it for all the reasons you just listed, Wilsey. When you kind of look at things in the situation, at least from my perspective, he's in competition with Tenorti, Hanley, Solovyov, Hunter Brustevich. And for me, and just looking at how the Calgary Flames defense might shape up, I'd rather have Tyson Barry in that 6-7 role than maybe a 19-year-old turning 20 Hunter Brustevich, and certainly more than, in no disrespect, but Tenorti, Hanley, and Solovyov I've liked at times but haven't been enamored with. So if you can get Tyson Barry on a one-year deal, you can get him at a cheap salary, and say one of your guys in the AHL, one of your younger guys, if it's Grishnikov, Brustevich, whomever, happens to show that, okay, they're ready for full-time assignments in the NHL, or they've just been too good in the AHL, you don't owe Tyson Barry too much. You're not guaranteeing him an 82-game workload, and you do have the opportunity to bring up a young guy if he shows that he's ready to make the jump. We all know injuries are going to happen. There's all sorts of scenarios where a younger defenseman can get in. But for me and for everything that I've seen, I think Tyson Barry in your bottom pair or coming in and out of the lineup makes a whole lot more sense than maybe one of your younger defensemen.
I'm really still not sure, guys. I'm really, like, I think Barry helps you. I take a look at Monday night as a perfect example. Barry was a huge catalyst on two goals against Seattle. He wins a battle at the left point to set up the equalizer from Braden Pahal in the first period. Like, really good battle at the left point. Nice composure, nice awareness, keeps the puck in, gets it down low to Lomberg. Lomberg wins another battle. Bam, it's over to Pahal. It's 1-1. Then, I thought it was funny when Barry was asked about the power play last night. He goes, I mean, we only had 10 seconds on the power
play.
Wasn't
it seven?
It was less than 10 seconds because they went 1-for-1 on the power play and were very efficient because they scored off the ensuing faceoff. But again, faceoff win. Barry does a great job of getting it through. Because there were so many bodies and because he's so good at doing that, creates a rebound because Decord didn't see it until the last minute. And then Backlund picks it up across to Coleman. Bam, it's 2-1. There's Tyson Barry with two hard-earned, well-earned second assists just like that, that could have easily been primary assists. So you're like, okay, you see what he does on the one end. And then I also thought there were four or five instances where you're like, whoa, there are some really rough moments in his own zone where some easy battles lost and some defensive reads that led to him and Pahal being hemmed in for extended periods of time, forcing some icings and some extended shifts. You're like, okay, well, there's the other side, the second side of this sword when it comes to Barry. Now, that's not surprising. That's who Tyson Barry has been throughout his career. Very, very high-end and excels when it comes to running a power play, when it comes to the poise he has in the offensive zone. He is very, very good. You know, Wilsey, you threw out that stat about the points he has over the last number of years that you can throw out in just a second. But, you know, he's been a very productive player in this league because of that. And yet, I'm like, okay, where does he fit in this top six? Is he going to displace Jake Bean on the left side? And then he's playing left side with Pahal? Because I think Pahal is your best option as your third pairing right side guy. But then why did you sign Bean for 2 years if he's not going to be in your everyday six? If he's going to be your everyday number three right side D, that means no Pahal. And if he's going to be your number seven, well, then how does he help you run your second power play unit? So I'm having a hard time with it because I think he could help them. And I think that I think that there are a lot of good things that he brings to the group. And I think that you can live with some of the other side of that sword as the year goes along. And then, Wilsey, you brought up the other side of it. I just worry. So you sign Barry, and you go with seven defensemen. Now, all of a sudden, that's Hanley and Tenorti in the American League, too. And now you've got Solovyov, Poirier, Brustevich, and Grushnikov. And you're like, well, you need your young players to develop down there. And Tenorti and Hanley are getting time. And it becomes really complicated. And so that's why I'm still not sure, because I see the upside and I see the downside. And so for me, I want to see the final two preseason games. Less about Barry. Honestly, I don't think Tyson Barry can do anything more than he's already done. He's shown us what he is, and the Flames know what he is. I think the decision comes down to, are they okay with somebody else being on the roster? Are they okay with not having what Tyson Barry brings? And that's what I think maybe some of the decisions are going to be as they play into their final two preseason games. So that's a long way of saying, I don't know, guys. I think Tyson Barry can absolutely help them, but I am not convinced yet it is 100% the right move for the organization, even though I do think the tea leaves would tell you it's more likely than not he will get a contract.
Yeah, and the stat you were referring to, Pat, is since Tyson Barry became a full-time NHLer back in 2014-2015, there are only six defensemen in the league who have produced more points than he has. Pretty darn impressive when you think about it. And you do know what he is. You know the strengths and you know the weaknesses of his game. But for me, you know, we talked about Sam Honzak and how we think he's taken someone's job. You know, if they had Tyson Barry penciled in as one of their top seven right defensemen at the start of training camp in the preseason, did one of the young guys take his job? You could argue that Braden Pahal did with the way he's performed in the preseason. Not a young guy, but a guy who I think we all consider to be on the bubble to be in the top six. And if you can get Tyson Barry for the right price, let's say around $1 million, would it be the worst thing in the world if he didn't play every game? If I'm not mistaken, he played in 41 games last season. So maybe you look at him and Braden Pahal as your 6-7 guys. And, you know, if it's Jared Tenorti or Joel Hanley as your number eight, if you want to carry a couple of extra defensemen at the NHL level, that eases the logjam at the AHL level. I just think that right now he's better than the group of players that he was competing with. For me, Artem Grushnikov was the best of the young guys, but they've sent him down and they stopped giving him games. So I think we all knew where that was going, mm-hmm. at least for the time being. So I would sign him again. If it's for the right money and the right term, I think they can get him for a year. The question is, would he take around $1 million or is he expecting more than that?
Yep. Great, great, great dilemmas to have. And boy, it sure is better having these conversations than, I guess, like,
who the heck are they going to get to play in that third pair?
Yeah, like, who's the best of the bad options? You'd much rather have this. Pahal's had a good camp. We know what Barry is. He's done all he can do on a PTO, I think. You talk about Brustevich and Grushnikov and what they've done. You'd much rather have these problems than have it all be decided for you by default, right?
And just quickly, guys, the power play has to be better this season. The power play completely killed them last year, and it went beyond just their poor power play percentage and inability to score power play goals when they needed to. It was just a momentum sucker. You know, like when you go on the power play and you don't score and you don't generate any momentum, you're basically giving momentum to the other team. Their power play has to be better if they're going to win more hockey games this year, and I just think Tyson Barry makes your power play better. It's kind of as simple as that for me.
Yep. Yep. And he could, again. I think you owe it to yourself to go with the number one unit that you finished last year with, where Vix, what was it, the final 28 games or whatever
it was?
Top
seven in the league.
Yeah, top five, top seven in the league last year. Kuzmenko was a big part of that, but so was Uyghur. And so I think having Uyghur with those forwards, I think you owe it to yourself to start the year with that number one power play unit. And if they do decide to sign Barry, then you can have him on a number two unit with Anderson or by himself. But the overall conversation about what Barry could bring, if it doesn't work with Uyghur, yeah, you could easily move him into being a number one guy if that's the situation, if they decide to sign him. So,
and if you can lean on a third period defenseman to eat up some special times minutes, I think that's a win, right? Because yep. He's probably not going to play a lot of 5-on-5 minutes compared to the top four, but if he can eat up some power play time, And you take those minutes away from some other guys who maybe aren't as good in that role, and you'd rather have out there 5-on-5 or on the penalty kill, then I think that's a win in a way as well.
Yep. Thank you, Wilsey. We'll do it again on Wednesday from Winnipeg.
Okay, guys. Have a good night.
He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That's our Daily Flames Roundtable as we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk. Cam, Shan, our producers this hour as well. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.